Hello. Welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
I'm well, my friend. How are you?
Good. I'm watching a lot of good basketball. We're, it's so funny. Like, we're past the halfway point. All-Stars another month away. Like, we All-Stars at the two-thirds point, and I feel like these guys are like, I need a break now. They're like looking like, you remember what it was like when guys would like start holding their shorts when they're bending over? I'm like, they're looking at the bench like, I need a break now.
Especially the ones that have not been injured very much. Yeah, this is, I don't think it's as much physical as mental. Mm-hmm. I really, in talking to players as often as I do, I texted one player this morning, take a mental health day. I wrote to him, take a mental health day. He's been playing a lot and he's young and you need a break. And yeah. I do this a lot. Like take your day off. Don't think about basketball. I'll call you tomorrow.
Yeah. And we'll get into that a little bit later. One Stan Van Gundy had some interesting comments he put out on the most nuanced platform in the world, Twitter.
Yeah, it's just gotten worse every day too. It makes me so sad.
So it's something that we should talk about with some nuance here on this show. But I wanted to open talking about something you brought to my attention, David. Anthony Grant, head coach of the University of Dayton, he addressed the media after a game recently, said that, you know, he's receiving some voicemails from fans, like threatening voicemails about, you know, losing games. I mean, games they actually won, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't cover the point spread. And, you know, college basketball is full of 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids, right? And if you are going to base strategies of like money and your life around the whims and act, first of all, sports betting is what it is, right? Like, it's a crapshoot. Like, you know what you're getting into when you do it. But if you're going to come at coaches and young kids for not holding on to point spreads and different things like that, I mean, that says so much about who you are as a person. And, you know, that's not what we enjoy sports for.
Yeah. Yeah, so I read that. So I go back with Anthony. We both coached against each other as assistant. I was the head coach of the team and a varsity basketball team camp. I was coaching for a friend. I was a JV coach. I was 23 years old. But he asked me to take his team, and I coached against Anthony Grant and another coach named Frank Martin, who's been at South Carolina to the Final Four.
Yep.
Now he's coaching at Northeastern. They were assistant coaches to Miami Senior High, the best program and one of the best in the country over the last 30, 40 years. And so I've known him forever. Anthony was the top assistant coach of Florida when they won back-to-back national championships, recruited Corey Bruin, Noah, and those guys. And he had a baby that was born, stillborn. And a friend of mine who was very close to Anthony said, Anthony stayed in the hospital room with his dead baby for 24 hours crying. And then he lost another child not too long ago, a more grown-up child, to some tragic circumstance. And so I think about that. He's from the streets of a tough part of Miami where he's from. He played at Dayton, which is where he's coaching now. And this is a serious man. So for him to publicly address Dayton fans saying, basically, fuck you. If you're going to harass my young players, who all of which have some kind of stories like Anthony, as we all do, we don't need you. Like, what are you doing? And so I brought it to your attention because we talk about fantasy sports here on the show. We're sponsored by them. It's very much it's part of the culture now. And it's just in its infancy, is my guess. That's why you see all these ads to begin with. I get it. I think it's not interesting to me. Just because I have to do this stuff anyway, but for the average fan to be invested. In fact, I think going forward, and this is, I haven't told you this, Gerard, I think True Hoop's going to be even bigger because as people want to start really interacting with the sport that they love and have a more insightful, intelligent, reasoned opinion, especially as they make decisions for fantasy or whatever, I just think we're going to be the best site out there to help them do that. Mm-hmm. Now I get worried that, yeah, these are kids at Dayton, kids. They're young men, 18 to 22 typically. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the Oklahoma City Thunder. Their average age is 23.14 to start the season. We have a lot of young players in this league. And so when do we turn that corner where the wrong person, the Russian mob or whatever, is investing so much money into a game or a fantasy, this, that, whatever, and they start threatening. I'm worried about that. I'm not saying we need to police it. Like anything else, it needs to be policed, but it does concern me that people go over the edge when money's on the line.
Yeah, I mean, look, and it's this, of course, is once online gambling and it became legalized for sports gambling in the U.S., this opened up Pandora's box, right? Like, and they know this,
but yeah.
the leagues can't refuse the money. I mean, we can't refuse the money. Like, we get it, right? But there needs to be oversight, and we need to be very mindful of who and what is going on and what we're doing behind the scenes, right? And ultimately, at that level, right? These are young men, as you mentioned, in college, and you know, ultimately, there are people involved in this, right? Actual human beings, and keep that at the center of things when you're thinking about this stuff.
Yeah.
Great game last night. Memphis Grizzlies versus the Cleveland Cavaliers. Memphis won the game in the last second with a great defensive play by Dylan Brooks, 115-114.
He's a very good defensive player.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to make an all-defensive team.
Yeah, I think I think you're right.
He is outstanding. I was actually watching the nuances of that game because, you know, you hang out with Coach Thorpe, you get smart about basketball. So I'm watching. I'm like, ooh, look at this possession. It was clear on a play. It was meant on a handoff to get the ball to Darius Garland. But Brooks is denying him the whole way, and it's forcing them later into the shot clock. They're like, oh, crap, now I got to do this one-on-one thing. Now, they scored anyway, but that wasn't how the play was supposed to go, right? It was supposed to be, right, you get the – I think it was Horn's action. Get the ball to Garland and start something. He didn't get it, right? And I'm like, ooh, Dylan Brooks, I like what you're doing here. I like it.
I like when guards try to disrupt an offense by denying. You need to make sure you get help on the weak side. You'll get set up to go back door otherwise. And if you're pressed up on your player, then you also, by definition, can't really help on someone else inside. And so it's a risk involved in that. But remember – my very simple teaching point about defense is you're basically a blackjack dealer trying to deal 16s. Mm-hmm. And what makes guys like Luka and Durant in particular, those two, the players they are, is you can't even deal them a 16. There are no 16s for them. Everything is makeable. Everything is makeable. So, and not just that, they can get to the spots they want to go to begin with. And in many cases, because they're so good, those two, at where they can start their offense because they're so big, you can't really deny them. Almost everything's an 11 for them. Double down on everything. But yeah, so if you're guarding Cleveland, you try to make them hit on 16. They still might make it. But no casino is going to go broke unless it's run by Trump. If you can always start with a player getting 16, the truth is nobody would ever play, right? You have no chance to make money. Right. That's what good defenses do is they're dealing a lot of 13, 14, 15, and 16s. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it. I love when you talk about it as blackjack. I'm like, ah, it makes so much sense.
It's just odds. It's just math.
It really is. So 11 in a row for Memphis in that win last night. And I wonder, I was like, ooh, is that a future finals matchup? And maybe not this year, but, you know, and again, it's tough, right? Who knows? Injuries could happen. Right. Who knows? You can't predict the future. It's very, very difficult. But these are teams that look like, man, they have the requisite tools defensively. Evan Mobley and Jaren Jackson Jr. are similar types of players. So I was watching that and I was saying, oh man, look at this. This is like Evan Mobley, like I remember people being like early in his rookie year when he was like doing really well. He's already what people think Jaren Jackson Jr. is. I was like, calm down. I was like, you just wait. And Jaren Jackson Jr. might be defensive player of the year this year. Like,
no, might be. You and I are taking a flamethrower to the voting machines. If he doesn't win, assuming he stays healthy, right? Take a flamethrower to that place, as Al Pacino said, instead of a woman. Yeah.
Without question. He is outstanding. They have Brooks. Of course, John Morant, Desmond Bain. He's getting back into his groove. Yeah. Shot it really well last night. That's a hell of a backcourt. I just really like what both these teams are doing. By the way, Cleveland was without Mitchell last night.
Yeah, pretty impressive.
They can guard too. Yeah. Cleveland can guard, for sure. Guard their asses
off. They're
both
elite defensive teams. And I think I want to make a point though about Jaren Jackson and Evan Mobley. Mm-hmm. My friend Zach Lowe was on with Jeff Van Gundy this week on the Low Post that I always listen to, and they were talking about Evan Mobley and Scottie Barnes. You know, they've taken a step backwards, and there's a lot of angst. Zach wasn't having it. It's like let's just see big picture here. Well. As I said to you off air, Jaren Jackson showed us the path. Because a couple of years ago, when people were like, oh, come on, what is he? Number 4 pick, what's he worth? Well, we know now. right? He's right there. The fact that I can even be unsure that I'm wrong, that he wasn't the best prospect and maybe Luka was, tells you how good he is, because we know what Luka is. And Evan Mobley is, he and Scottie are like 21. Mm-hmm. Like, can we just, as Larry David would say, curb your enthusiasm. In the negative, they're going to be just fine. I think you're very insightful by suggesting that could be a finals precursor. It absolutely can be. And you wouldn't expect it this year, but to think that it can't happen this year means you're not paying attention to the fact that injuries happen all the time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cleveland is not going to be an easy out. And we know what Donovan Mitchell can do in the postseason. He is a one-man wrecking crew. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, you're dead on that. And also, you do player development, and you know this. Development isn't linear. Like, you make a leap doesn't mean, all right, next year, now you go up the eight. It's like the stock market. It looks like, and then eventually you find your level, and then, okay, now we can build on that. But it takes time. Now, of course, some of the elites, yes, their development goes like this. Yeah. Some, but that's like LeBron, like, right? That's like two people.
Right.
Everybody else. It's, you know, you gotta ride some ups and downs. That's just the nature of it's, as you say, this game's fucking hard, man.
Well, so I love to compare athletes to among other people, movie stars. I listened to Adam Sandler has like 18 movies that's made whatever, 100 million, whatever the number was. But not everyone. And no one's out fighting him. He's got some competition for movies. But normally a great movie will make money no matter when it's released. There is no celebrity. There's no success story that's nothing but wins. And in nothing else but sports is there an opponent trying to beat your brains in. I used to always say McDonald's probably loved Burger King because it just created the interest in fast food hamburger when there wasn't one before. That's not how it is in sports. They're trying to beat your brains in all the time. And so, yeah. And there's also the distraction factor, which I think, I don't know Evan Mobley's story as well. I only can guess on Scottie's, but I don't know that those guys really did the grind this summer. Why would they? They destroyed, as rookies, they killed it. Mm-hmm. Human nature is, all right, we got this. I'm going to go play pickup here. I'll play 5-on-5 right there. They're sending me private jets to go places. They're paying me to do this commercial, right, that commercial. This is great. And then you get punched in the face with a cinder block. Right? The cinder block are all these amazing athletes, incredibly skilled, that are trying to get your job, take your money. It is a zero-sum game. If I get that money, you're not getting it. But if I get it, you can't get it, that kind of thing. If you get it, I can't get it. This is the game of the game. So Scottie's playing really well right now. Yes, he's had a very good 2023. I think you're exactly right. Jaren Jackson is the face of, with big guys especially, let's just cool your jets to the negative, give these guys a chance to continue to grow.
And remember with Tripp, he had two meniscus surgeries that basically robbed him of summers of development. And you know this as a player development coach. Well, if I got a rehab from injury all summer, guess what I'm not doing? Developing my basketball skills. Because
That was Clay Thompson. He was rehabbing all summer. I have a young man that I help who needs to go get surgery. He's crushing it right now in the G League. It's not going to be a big deal, but he's going to be out 2 months. And they're not going to let him finish the season, even though he's pain-free, because that means he's losing 2 months of development. So you might as well do it at some point when he just continues to kill the G League enough times. All right, let's just go get the surgery and be done with it so you can have a regular offseason. It's super important for young players. So, yeah, that's a great point on Jaren Jackson.
Development's huge, man. In the summer, you got to be able to get that work in, right? Go to the lab. And you see it, the vets, the best players in the league, LeBron's still working hard in the summer. Steph, KD, still
working. There isn't anyone that isn't. And except for Harden, in the past, I mean, when he's not done it, and you can see it in his November, December work. I heard this summer he worked harder, and he looked better, and he had a better start to the year. That's not a surprise.
Yeah, no, it's got to put in that work, kids. All right, so, you know, we're talking about Memphis, hottest team in the league, 111 straight. We're thinking they could be a potential finals team this year. Maybe they play Cleveland, sure. Who knows? Memphis, New Orleans, Oklahoma City, possibly even the Clippers, These are teams, but the Clippers are not at the level those three teams are, right? OKC and the Clippers are about the same, like record wise, but Memphis and New Orleans are way above the pack.
Right.
But these four teams have assets to trade in terms of picks, swaps. I think OKC has 15 picks the next 5 years.
13 first round picks the next 5 years.
Which is silly. New Orleans has a ton. Memphis has a ton. And they all three of them have young talent to move as well. Because of the parity and the closeness that everything is right now. And, you know, parity makes it seem like it's bad. It's not bad. It's just that everybody's good right now.
Yeah.
There's no Phoenix Suns who are running away with the lead. Right. Everybody. I mean, Boston is creeping up a little bit. They've got about a 3-game lead right now. But everybody's pretty much bunched together. Do you, if you're Memphis, New Orleans, roll the dice and say, all right, if we can get one of those dudes, do we do it now and try to win the title this year because we think we're ready?
So I always say the same thing. I think you should consider any trade that makes you better now and later. So you can't give up so much for the now that you end up paying a big penalty later. I don't think that's rocket science. Not that every team subscribes to that because they don't. The Lakers have Russell Westbrook and whatever. but I do think that those teams have so much in terms of trade value within the roster as well as their draft stash that they can do that. They can trade and be better now and later. So we could talk about a couple of things here, Gerard. We can talk about teams that might start selling pieces. Portland, for example. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I have no knowledge of Damian or Anthony Simons or Jeremy Grant. Wanted to get out. Wanted to trade those guys. The Raptors have a decision to make. Four games below 500. They're playing better now, but between Siakam and Gary Trent Jr. and Fred VanVleet and the unhappy OG Anunoby, not to mention some centers who would be good depth for another team. They're not really good enough to start. Do they start breaking things up? And then I looked at four players. Alec Burks in Detroit, 45%. What's he doing there? Isaiah Joe for OKC, 45%. I think the Sixers wanted him and just couldn't make it happen. They needed D'Anthony Melton, whatever. Jeremy Grant's at 43% with playoff experience. High flyer athlete for the Blazers. Doug McDermott, terrible defense. 41% for the Spurs. Obviously, Jakob Poeltl is there. Of course. I don't think they'll trade KJ. If you can, I mean, shooting is always an absolute thing. And for a team, especially like Memphis, that can really defend with Jaren Jackson, you can kind of absorb a lesser defender like a Doug McDermott and be okay. And you're going to play him in spots anyway. But Yeah, I think that I would be surprised if those teams don't feel like, you know, let's tweak something. Even if Memphis gave up Zaire Williams, who I like where he's going.
I like him a lot, yeah.
But they're young enough to absorb that loss, add a player a little more like a Jeremy Grant, just making up a name, and be better, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I like where you're going there. Memphis, the thing about Memphis, too, is their bench, right? Santi Aldama played well in that last game. He gets a ton of minutes. He played well.
But I think their bench needs to get better.
Okay.
I think... To your point exactly, because I looked at that today, Gerard. If they want to try to win it this year, you tell me you trust that bench? John Conchar? I mean,
right.
Aldama?
They're young guys.
They've never done anything close to it before. Right. And again, I don't think experience is everything. But I just don't think those guys are that good of players compared to what they might be able to get if they want to say, fuck it. Those guys aren't going to be game changers in the future either, some of their bench guys. Let's see if we can't give up one trade asset, one draft asset, some of these other guys that can play well for another team and maybe push past Denver or Golden State or whoever is there in Dallas, whatever, for the West.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see, like, you know, a name that I keep thinking about because I don't know what's going on in Toronto is Pascal Siakam, right? Would he instantly help that make that Memphis team a title, you know, a title favorite possibly, right?
The hard thing about those guys is $35 million salary.
Whoa.
I played with the trade machine about that. Yeah, that's the challenge. How do you make that deal work? Because I thought OKC. Yeah. My first thought was, I have no idea if they would even consider it, but Siakam on that team, that team can't rebound. Oh, and speaking of that team, we'll talk about it in a little bit. I wrote about him this week. Mm-hmm. They can't rebound. There's a reason why they can't rebound. The way they play, their style of play and everything, we'll get to that later. He solves every hole they have and fits in perfectly with their design offensively, which I wrote about. But $35 million, I don't know. I don't understand the cap well enough to know trade exceptions and how much right. under the cap are they. Toronto isn't.
Right.
So I don't think they can do that. But Gary Trent Jr. is more affordable mm-hmm. for some of these teams that really need shooting. He's not shooting great this year. I think 36%. He's been a very good shooter. So, yeah, I think to your point, there might be a superstar or two that's gettable. There's a lot of good players that give real depth and maybe a more diverse roster for these coaches mm-hmm. come playoff time to pivot when they need to.
If you're the Wizards, then you're not going anywhere.
Exactly.
Kyle Kuzma is very
exactly right.
Now, what you worry about there is that he will be a unrestricted free agent at the end of the season, and you don't want to just rent and give up some, and then he doesn't re-sign with you. Then you're like,
You would have to make the phone call. Yes. This is what would happen. The GM calls the agent, Kyle's agent. Hey, we're going to trade for him. What do you think he's going to make in the market? We can afford that. We're going to, if you think you'll give us a real shot, if we play well with them, can we do it? Yeah. I think the Wizards are one of those teams. Yeah. Miami needs shooting.
Oh my God.
Miami needs shooting. They're just not shooting well. They're playing well, not shooting well.
They're guarding their butts off, but man, offense is such a slog for them.
They just can't shoot. Yeah. So if they could shoot, it would change a lot. So all these guys, that list I gave you, plus Kuzma, whatever. Kuzma's a good playmaker.
Very
good. He's good at everything. Yeah. So yeah, I think someone's gonna do something big. Maybe not get a Siakam like player, but close.
You know, and then you look at, you mentioned the salaries. That's why, that's what makes getting Beal so difficult, right? And plus, Beal's always hurt anyway. But assuming he's healthy, who's got $40 million, right? That's a hard acquisition to do without blowing up your entire roster. It'll be very interesting. And shooting is always a premium, right? Who's got a dearth of or a surplus of shooters that they can move one to get something else that they need? It'll be interesting because I think now, this season more than any other seasons, because there isn't that clear number one, teams that make a tweak here or there could do it. Look, between Denver, Memphis, and New Orleans, just the top three teams in the West. I mean, those guys can get to the conference finals. Now, and I say nothing about Golden State if they're healthy and they just and they do what they got
to
do.
They have to make some moves for their bench.
Well, here's the question I have to ask you. So, we know they try to do the two timeline thing with Kuminga and Wiseman and Moody. Yeah. But, I mean, Kuminga's hurt. Wiseman and Moody are barely in the rotation.
Yeah.
Are they going to move one of them? I know you love Wiseman. You don't want to. But are they going to move one of those guys to get a little bit more shored up on their bench?
I think all three of those guys should be in play at this point. It's not working out great. You don't trade them just to trade them. But if you can enhance your bench, either you're going to play those guys more or you got to do a deal of some sort. The Warriors starting five is still the best starting five in the league. I think the Nuggets starting five is catching them, but the Warriors are number one. And obviously Curry's been out, but he was out for a while. So I think they have to do something. And before we forget, and I don't know when we're going to talk about OKC, but that's the other team that may decide not to contend. Mm-hmm. So they've got, like 11 dudes shooting well right now in the last 15 games or so, where they're 11-5 last 16 games and blowing out team, double figure every win, 7-2, I think, in 2023, all double figure wins, scored 150 on Boston. Maybe you trade Isaiah Joe because you just want to add more to the kitty to get whatever you're going to try to go for when you're going to try to go for it. You know,
maybe you trade Lou Dort.
There's a lot of guys. Trey Mann's shooting really well right now as a former first round pick. Kenrick Williams played great last night. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of no names. And my point on that is in pretty much everything in life and negotiation, leverage is built from success. I always say this stupid story, but Tom Friedman wrote about this in From Beirut to Jerusalem. After Egypt beat Israel in the Yom Kippur War, Anwar Sadat referred to that war like a ton of times in a big speech when he made peace with Israel. He kept saying, "Oh, you people of September." He would say in Arabic, because that's when the war was fought. And so he was referencing, hey, that good feeling you have. Now let's make peace with these people. That's leverage. Well, OKC has that same leverage now more than they've had in years because they're winning with these same guys. So to your point, if they want to trade Lou Dort, it's easier to trade Lou Dort when he's starting on a what looks like going to be a playoff team. They're one game below 500. It's easier to do it now than it would have been 2 months ago.
Yeah.
So they've got three or four pieces who sadly don't necessarily have to be part of their solution long term because they're playing so well right now. It sucks for the player, but this is the business that they're in.
So let's actually talk about OKC. You mentioned you wrote a piece about them that's just came out now on Troop.com. Everyone, go check that out. In that starting five right now, I would say SGA and Giddy are probably the only ones that you're like, we're definitely keeping them. Everybody else, look, because I think they may do that thing you mentioned, which is we're going to play about 500 ball. Look, I mean, they're ahead of the Warriors, I think, like by a half game or something.
I think OKC is one game below 500.
So that right, so they're like that.
I thought the Warriors were at 500, so they're right.
Warriors dropped below again because they lost
last night.
Games in a row.
All right.
So you're in that like that range, and to your point, oh, these guys are better than we thought. They're looking pretty good now. Sam Presti moves a Lou Dort, moves again all these guys to get. I get back picks or whatever. We go back to the bottom and we start regressing. All of a sudden, SGA is out for 3 weeks with some mysterious injury. Right, we start losing games again. We're in the Victor Wembanyama sweepstakes. Next year, we get Chet coming back. We get all our guys. And now it's like, okay, now we're really going for it. I think it's interesting.
I think it's more likely that they make a move for I just think that Sam Presti, who's a friend of mine, a smart guy, he is going to just look at each deal in and of itself. In other words, I don't think he wants to tank anymore. I don't think they can get down that low anymore. They're not going to get enough ping pong balls. That doesn't mean they're going to make the playoffs. It's so hard to make the playoffs, and SGA goes down, they definitely won't do anything. He is the fulcrum for sure. He is the engine of their driving kick offense. And I don't think Josh Giddey's married to them. And here's my point. You're right to mention him. He's becoming a good player. I don't know how, except for he's 6'8" and skilled. He's starting to shoot well. I wrote about this. They hired Chip Englund, former Duke assistant coach, longtime Spurs coach.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, Josh is shooting well now. He has never done that before. A brilliant passer, a crafty guy who rebounds, and they're terrible on rebounding because they play four guards so often, which is what I wrote about this. Their whole offense is driving kick, which is, we all talk about driving kick. They're amazing at it. So the Celtics, I wrote this, they have 55 drives a game, number two in the league. There's like nine other teams, maybe 10 teams, all within just a few drives of Boston. But the Thunder are at 65 drives a game. They are dominating a stat like in a way you never see anyone dominate a stat. SGA leads the league in drives, leads the league in points off drives, free throws off drives. They lead the league in points off drives as a team, and passes off drives are one of the few. They also play they're top five in duration of touches. That ball is moving. Attack, kick, attack, kick, attack, kick, bucket. Last night, they scored 47 field goals against Indiana. 41 were assisted, an all-time Thunder record. Perfect timing for our article, actually. So, Josh Giddey looks good. But if another team, let's just say, I'm making this up, let's say Chicago, says, you know, we got Pat Williams, who's really coming on as a player, finally, although he's only 21 himself, maybe 22. We're going to look at trading DeRozan. We're going to look at trading Zach LaVine. We're definitely going to trade Vooch as a center. Zach LaVine next to SGA fits pretty damn good.
That's pretty good.
Because he's a driving kick fiend also. So maybe Lou Dort is part of that deal. He's only 23. Maybe Josh Giddey they like with Pat Williams. So you can start upgrading your roster now. Try to get to 41 wins this year, whatever the number is going to be, 42, 43, to make the playoffs this year, but feel like, oh, we've got a really nice thing going forward and a $30 million almost in cap space for next year. So I'm not suggesting at all they're trading for Zach LaVine. There's lots of guys they can look at.
Right.
Make a slight upgrade or even a significant upgrade with this roster, and that helps entice the free agent to come.
And
I wrote this to your point on Josh Giddey. Maybe they keep him. Like you get to a point where they have to argue, well, we're better off with that guy than trading him for some other guy. But not everyone on this team right now, they're going to say that about.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you trade, what do you always say? You trade at your highest, yes. right? At their highest yes. value. Well, when you're rolling, you have your highest value.
So this is, David, what you talk about all the time, which is culture matters, right? Just like you can build a culture of winning, you can build a culture of losing. There's no point now because they're much more competent than we probably thought they were going to be.
For sure.
To your point, let's go for that 40-41 win. See, maybe it's play-in, but whatever. Play-in. Look, the New Orleans Pelicans got in the play-in last year, and they won and got the 8 seed.
Yep.
So you do that, and then, as you mentioned, over the summer, you're going to have a ton of cap space. They have all those picks they can trade. They can acquire a big-time star. Holmgren comes back. Then it's like, oh, we are now – we've accelerated our curve now. So now we're what Memphis was – a year ago or 2 years ago. We're what New Orleans was a year ago, right? And now we are a young team with a bunch of guys who can now be that step because maybe, just maybe, SGA is on par with a Ja Morant and a Zion Williamson.
I think he is, or at least trending that way. Me mostly has been speculating wrong. I was wrong. You got to trade SGA. How right. can he be happy? Well, here's how. They knew better than me. That well, we're gonna turn the corner. He talked about it. I referenced it in the article, and you mentioned Chet. So you're a team that does drive kick. Who do you want as your? And they can't rebound. They do block shots pretty good because they're so athletic. And they play so hard, but they don't. On paper, they don't look like they'd be a good defensive team. They're top 10 in defense. So that's coaching, by the way. That's culture. Mm-hmm. That's coaching. That's strategy and execution. So what kind of five do you want on a team that loves a driving kick, needs help at the rim? Oh, they got Chet Holmgren. Driving kick guard in 7 foot that blocks shots and really – I think he's going to be a great rebounder for them like Marcus Camby was, not for the Thunder, but in general. I said he's got Marcus Camby 2.0. He's going to be up for Defensive Player of the Year one day. He can really rebound. I think he's going to be as he gets stronger, and he can shoot. So that Camby really could never shoot, never tried. So, yeah, now I understand why they were married to him and why even when Paolo went one, Jabari Smith was there, they still went Chet. They knew exactly what they were doing. We're drafting a five that fits our driving kick offense. Five around zero, everyone can shoot threes. Right? We talk about that. Not everyone does that. They'll do that.
That is modern offense, David, with all five guys weaponized. And that is what makes playing basketball now in today's game. A team like Oklahoma City realized, right, that true five out where everybody can shoot, so much more difficult to play than 1990s basketball, right? When maybe two guys are weaponized,
right?
Three,
well,
perhaps.
But, so on that point, a team like the Lakers has centers that can shoot the three, but they don't ever throw them the ball to shoot the three. You need the coaching part of it. You've got this guy, Mark Degno, has built the strategy to that roster and seen it through. They've been bad for 2 years. You could call it tanking, but they traded Chris Paul at the right time. They changed coaches. They had a brand new coach. Now he coached 4 years in the G League. But so he has some experience, which I really like that, as opposed to hiring these guys that have been assistants forever, never run a team in their lives. And they probably run their families. That's what the wife does very often in our country because they're busy. They're coaching games. I get it. My wife certainly ran our family, and my mom ran my house when I was growing up. I think that they've got all these little pieces in place now where they've seen it through, and now they can start filling holes. So Lou Dort's good, but we can maybe find someone who's better that does what Lou does, but he's better at it than Lou. And he's making more money and he's older. And another team wants to trade that guy and get Lou because they know, well, he did a good job building the foundation for OKC. He can build the foundation here. You can start really kind of playing with that stuff, I think. And then it's a matter of they just have to decide what they want to do. Do they want to do it now? Or do they just want to play this through this year? Because they'll still be just as strong to make some moves in the offseason. That's up to them.
Yeah. OKC in the catbird seat. Make sure you guys get on truehoop.com and check out David's article out today. We will be back after a short break to talk about Stan Van Gundy. All right, David. You know, we talked about OKC and that five-out offense and how I said that, look, that is modern basketball. That's what makes playing the game now so taxing on your body, right? In years past, the space you had to cover was the size of a phone booth, right? In years past. Now, because of shooting and geometry of the court and coaching, I got to cover way more ground now, right? That's a different kind of tax on my body,
right?
Right. Banging Anthony Mason in the post is one kind of tax on my body, right? Right. Running around from the paint to the
and still banging
is another kind of tax on my body. Yeah. Either way, my body's getting taxed, right?
Right.
And I don't like it. But Stan Van Gundy went on that wonderful site known as Twitter. You know, it's full of nuance, and put this out there. Stan said, at 90s NBA teams had just a trainer and a strength coach. They practiced more often and harder and played more back-to-backs. Teams now have huge medical and performance staffs, he put in quotes, and value rest over practice. Yet injuries and games missed are way up. Something's not working. And my first thought was, well, Stan, do you know for a fact that injuries are more prevalent now than they were in the 1990s? I haven't seen any data on that. Maybe it's true, but okay. I'll even allow that to be true.
Right.
That is a factual statement. The game is different, right? Like, it is much different now than it was then. As we mentioned, the ground you have to cover is different. The level of skill is different, right? Your responsibilities defensively are much different. Again, banging Anthony Mason. Okay, that's one kind of tax. Now I'm getting banged by Giannis, and I also got to go race out and that's a lot of tax on my body, right? Which you didn't have to do. I pulled up a 1996 game, the Bulls versus the...
That's washing paint dry. Am I wrong? I've done this.
You're not wrong.
It's fucking ridiculous.
I'm like, what is even happening in this game right now? And I remember, I mean, I was a teenager. Like, I remember, I'm like, oh my God, this is like, what are we even doing right now?
The biggest myth perpetrated on the NBA basketball viewing public is the idea that handshaking mattered. Nobody guarded anybody.
No one guarded.
Now, that's not to say that as they got to the rim, you couldn't use your hands a little bit. If you don't think that's happening now, you're fucking crazy. although you can't touch the stars typically, you couldn't then either so much.
Right.
Michael Jordan shot a lot of free throws. He may have gotten pounded in a way that maybe flagrant fouls now, but he still shot a lot of free throws, as did all the great players. But nobody was, they were all back up, beep, beep, get back up. Because nobody was shooting anything. And but beyond that, Gerard, as we've talked about, the science is so in on this. And this is where, and I tweeted Stan. I don't want to text him. I don't really care that much. But those players, I was coaching then, high school kids. I stopped coaching in 92, but I started again like in late 90s, just as a volunteer. They weren't doing AAU tournaments the way they do them now. And for these players today, I witnessed it with my son's team. I've said this before, I'm sure, on the show. I've written about it, I'm sure. A typical weekend for a good team. We were very good. I think in our first season in maybe 19 or 20 tournaments, we made at least 12 finals. I want to say we went 7-5 in 12 finals. And that means that's 5 games minimum. You normally have 3 pool play games. And then there'll be like a Final Four and a championship game. But sometimes it's 6 games. Sometimes it's even 7 games. Now, we were built differently. We weren't sponsored by a shoe company team. We paid for everything ourselves as all the families chipped in. And we definitely try to control everything. Minutes played, missing games. We often would play games without our best 5 players, knowing that we're going to beat this team anyway. So let's just rest these guys all together. And it's like the Spurs on Christmas Day for Pop back in the day. Pat Bonner, go score 20 today, you know? But we were amazed all the time. We'd see these same teams not do that. And we only would play like on average 2 tournaments a month. And there were some tournaments we played 3. Some months we played 3 out of 5 weeks. And then some months we played just 1 and practice a couple times a week is all. But that is not the norm. These teams are playing 3 and 4 tournaments a month. And their practices are not like ours, where we're really running college practices. Even in 6th grade, they're just pick up all the time. And normally pick up basketball is not nearly as intense. But remember this, all of these top players are competing against each other in rankings. Mm-hmm. And it means something to them. They want to make a McDonald's game. They want to get the high major scholarship over the mid major, the mid major over the low major over D2, low major is D1 to D2. So even in pickup, when college coaches are watching, they're competing their ass off, which is not how normal pickup really is. And so they're showing up to the NBA wrecked. Their bodies are wrecked. Dr. Andrews spoke about this, the famous surgeon in Alabama. Dr. Marcus Elliott's written about this. Henry Abbott's mm-hmm. written about this. Mm-hmm. I asked Henry to come on the show. They wouldn't even do it. He's like, people don't care about data.
They don't.
Stan doesn't care. I don't know if Stan doesn't care or not. But that's what Stan's missing. The denominator is you're ignoring the denominator, which is they're already injured now, Stan. So it'd be much worse with only one performance training specialist. We're keeping them healthier than they otherwise would be because they're already wrecked to start.
You know, I love the point you made up about AAU because it's all cumulative, right?
Yeah.
The game has changed. The players are coming in with more basketball miles in their body and the increase of sports specialization at such a young age. You know, David, I'm sure this is the same for you. My best swimmers were often three-sport athletes, right? They were really good at other things. And that ability to cross-train in other sports, right, functionally use your athleticism in a different way was helpful, right?
That's what Dr. Andrews said. I think he testified to Congress about this even. Yeah.
As opposed to, I'm just doing this one thing from the time I'm seven, at seven, your muscles aren't even fully mature or developed yet. And it's just over. I know Max played high-level baseball when he was young. You know how many kids are having Tommy John surgery, like, on purpose, right? It's like, what are we even doing? Well,
one of my son's best friends was also a pitcher. And I thought he played way too... We monitored Max's pitches, his pitch count, all of our pitchers. And we shut him down. Like you got one more, you got the last batter. If you cross that threshold, this was Little League, they make you do it. But in AAU, there's no rules. And so we also, until they were 13, nobody could throw a breaking ball. I never let my son throw a breaking ball, but we let other players do two an inning. All their parents were doctors pretty much, but me. But they would be say, okay, two an inning, that's it. And if we saw you throw a third hook, you're out. And sure enough, my son, one of my son's best friends who went to a big time baseball program for pitching, had to get surgery. He threw himself out when he was 13, 14, 15, 12, 13, 14, 15. Like, all this shit matters in every sport, and they're overdoing it. And so that's what Stan, if we had Stan on our show, we would say, Coach, we understand your point, but you're missing the big picture here. Right. It's like you won't be able to get a great rock singer if they're screaming at the top of their lungs when they're 5 years old.
Right.
And especially when they don't know how to do it. That's the other thing is you have athletes who don't know how to take care of their bodies. Mm-hmm. If they had those professional training staffs when they were 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever, they'd be better off, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's just everything, right? It is a cumulative thing. And it's funny because Stan actually said something in that similar vein. Someone had said something about Nikola Jokic being like, someone said that athleticism is overrated because all these super athletes can't guard Nikola Jokic, right? Because he's got amazing skill. And Stan tweeted, you know, it's because we have such a narrow definition of athleticism. If you don't think Nikola Jokic is athletic, you're crazy.
He's right about that.
Well, Stan, it's the same thing here. Like, the game is different, right? Yeah. Like, there is a have a wide definition on what physicality means.
Right.
Physicality isn't just 1990s Knicks bruising Miami Heat. That's one kind of physicality. Right. There are other kinds of physicalities, right? And ways to tax your body.
On that subject, how the game has changed. Alperen Sengun had a big-time game against the Lakers the other day. He's a 28% going into the game three-point shooter. But he made a couple shots early. He was feeling it. So, of course, he can make his 28-foot shot. You have to guard him out there. If you want to stay off of Jokic, I understand it, when he's not shooting so well from three, he's going to pick you apart like Tom Brady does when you protect him. You got to pressure those guys. And that's not how they played back in the day. Everyone was in the paint. Now it's just so, so different. You got to move. You got to move to get there.
It is, you know, your body just, it's got the miles on it, right? It just has the miles on it. And so we have to find ways to, and of course, the 82-game season on top of that doesn't help, right? So this is why players look like, now we need a break, because they're telling you.
We should also add this. I think I've said before, I lost my chance to be a billionaire. I should have licensed my training curriculum when I was the only one doing player development for money, you know, in 1993. I fucked up. I didn't know any better. I was just a dumb kid. But in that process, I would have taught all of our 8,000 trainers in every state in America and the world to make sure you don't overdo it with your players, because that's not what's happening now. I talked to professional basketball player, NBA professional basketball player, who has his own trainer. And so I was kind of surprised. I don't mind it so much. But I figured, you know, he just probably helps him out during the week and on the phone. He's like, no. On any off day, I go see him for a 45-minute, like, pretty relatively intense session. So I said, you get no days off at all? He's like, no. I'm like, well, I understand why this guy wants, he wants money. I'm sure you pay him. He's like, yeah, but you need to take those days off. You're already playing 3-4 games every single week plus practice. You need to take some time off. And that was a surprise to him. But there's trainers at the high school level that for sure, in addition to all the work you're doing for high school AU, you're going to those guys and it never ends. And they're jumping and running, racing and all that. They're not just out playing pickup. Playing pickup is the best thing you can do because you don't play nearly as hard as you do if you're training with a real guy because you're going hard.
No. This is all, listen, as the game evolves and we want to see the best basketball, we want our guys to be healthy as long as possible, we're going to have to start changing some things.
Yeah.
And it's going to have to start at that youth level, right? And we need responsible, well-coached, well-trained, and educated people who are not in it for themselves, who are in it for the betterment of the sport and the athletes they work with, who are willing to follow what science says, right? Guys like Dr. Marcus Elliott, et cetera, like, look, man, 2 loads a week, probably enough, right? Like, yeah. And here's how we should structure it. And, you know, but, you know, once money's involved, that makes doing that really, really difficult. David, we started the show talking about the hottest team in the league, the Memphis Grizzlies, winners of 11 straight. There is a team about 90 minutes south of me in Philadelphia that Henry and myself have been like, man, we're not on the Philadelphia 76ers. We don't care. We don't care about that team. Well, all year you've been like, no, guys, I'm telling you, Sixers. We're like, yeah. What do you know, Thorpe? Well, last 20 games, 76ers, 16-4, looking pretty good. James Harden said something I thought was very interesting. Could just be Harden talking. This is the best team I've ever been on with a chance to win a championship. Now, James, I will say, you were on a team in Oklahoma City that was actually in the NBA Finals, and you were on a Houston Rockets team that was up 3-2 against the Kevin Durant Golden State Warriors with a lead in the second half that lost in the Western Conference Finals to go to the NBA Finals. I don't know if Philly is that good of those two teams, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think he did give a qualification, a quality of, a chance to win a championship, opposed to just purely best team. Those other teams were really good, too. I think that Harden is what we thought he would be. You and I talked about this on our show months ago. You're not going to get it every night. This isn't that guy. But he's going to run your team. He knows how to play. He's very smart, very, very bright player, and can give you two sometimes. Embiid is like Jokic. I mean, it's amazing. It's like having Magic and Bird at the same time. You know, one would, we say in at Passover, in the Jewish religion, we say Dayenu. It would have been sufficient. Had you just done this, it would have been sufficient. Had we just had Magic, it would have been sufficient. Magic and Bird, wow. If we just had Jokic or Embiid, it would have been sufficient. We got both. They are startlingly talented players. And I think the Sixers have a lot of other guys. They have a very, that's why OKC, you know, can't contend. Memphis worries me. D'Anthony Melton, George Niang, these are good players for Philadelphia. Memphis had Melton. They don't have him anymore.
Sure did.
And so, yeah, I just think that, and I think Joel Embiid's got a lot more to give. I said this last week, I think, or maybe Monday. Like, I think he's holding something back, and I mean that in a good way. He's not going to kill himself. He'll have something more in the postseason. They're not going to be like, I don't think you're going to beat them in anything, you know, closer than 6 if you beat them. Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah, and they're right now, they're up to 3rd in the Eastern Conference, 28-16. They're top 10 in offense and defense. They're, you know, listen, they are coming along. Like, you got Embiid. The one thing I did say is like, look, you got Joel Embiid, you're probably going to win 50 games just because of that, because he's that good, right? So he's one of those dudes in the league. You know, we often talk, David, about how in the 82-game season, it's a marathon and things change, right? And it's who can kind of find something about themselves and then find it, get it, and execute and go on a run. Last season was the Boston Celtics, right? A year ago, this coming weekend, the Celtics dropped two straight games and were two games below 500.
Yep.
Then they went 29-7 the rest of the way. We know what happened after that. Right. They went to the NBA Finals. We're up 2-1.
Up 2-1. Yeah. At home, 2-1. At home for game four.
Had a chance. Curry went nuts. We know how that went. So we had an idea of picking a team each that could potentially go on a similar type of run. So who is your team that you think can go on a run?
Yeah, so we listed the teams that have a losing record.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you we're not going to be able to say the Warriors because the truth is they have the best starting five. Right. They need help on the bench. So we're looking at the Bulls or the Raps in the East. Clippers, Wolves, Lakers, OKC, or the Suns in the West. Surprisingly, the Suns. So let me just first say this. I've also I'm thank you for crediting me on being high on the Lakers. The Sixers. Oh, yes. But I also thought the Lakers had the roster for it. I still do.
Correct.
They don't got the coach for it. Darvin Ham is maybe going to be a great coach one day. That day isn't today or anytime soon. They are awful to watch. It's a circus out there. That's the last thing. The last time I'll mention that team this year, probably. The Clippers, to me, it's probably easy to say Phoenix because when Booker comes back, whatever. But I think the Clippers have a lot of talent, and they need to thin it down a little bit. And Kawhi and Paul George have been good together, not incredible, good. But they have a lot of 300 plus minutes together. I think is all they've had. That would get better in time. So I would say if any of these teams can be like Boston, it would be LA Clippers.
You know, David, as you know, I think that's the only team I would agree with you because as you put out this sort of like challenge, like who do you think could do it? I don't like any of the rest of those teams. Now, look, Phoenix, I've been very clear about this. I just don't like the vibes over there.
They might trade Ayton.
Right, I don't
that's
like
what
it.
We're hearing.
And Chris Paul, I love the point guard, but he's showing that he's 38 years old now, and that's a problem. And if Booker, hamstrings are tough, man. So I don't see it from them. Minnesota also, I don't like the vibes going on over there. I don't know what's happening. Oh, they played well last night in the loss to the Nuggets. None of those teams over there that are under 500, I'm like, you can maybe, I mean, I don't know what Portland's doing. Like, Dame's great, but are you going to trade people? No. So I like nobody. Clippers are the only team I'm like, okay. Because I know if Kawhi and Paul George play, that's good enough.
They've got a shot anyway,
Yeah, I just, you mentioned the Lakers. It's funny because I put the show notes. We're not talking about this team. They lost last night to the Kings, of course. The Kings, by the way, who are up to third.
Yeah, they're third in the West,
In the West. Light the beam, Sacramento. Look, Sacramento fans, I think you said it right a couple of shows ago. I think you can start to plan for the first round of the playoffs. Yeah. I don't want to, you can start to plan for that.
Yeah.
So good for those Kings fans. Look, the Lakers are what they are, but LeBron James is soon to pass Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for the all-time scoring list.
Yeah. 10 or 15 games away.
Mm-hmm. He is the only player in NBA history with 38,000, at least 38,000 career points, at least 10,000 rebounds, and at least 10,000 assists. That is, just let that sink in your head. The only player in NBA history to have those kinds of numbers. He might be the greatest player of all time. He certainly might have the greatest career of all time. I think it's important that we, and we'll talk about it more once he actually passes Kareem. Because you're looking at probably the two greatest basketball careers in their totality. From high school to pros, these two guys. It's just... it's incredible and how fortunate we are. And of course, you throw Michael Jordan in there. Yeah. I've always said those three to me are the ones who have really been standard bearers of like these are the greatest players. And I did see Kareem late in his career as a member of the Lakers. Three greatest basketball players that I've ever seen.
Well, I just want to say this because we'll talk more about LeBron when he actually breaks the record. But Kareem played 4 years of college, of which three counted. He couldn't, you couldn't play as freshman for all the stupid reasons of the NCAA. That dude was ready for the NBA right away. That NBA, especially. Probably this one, too. He'd have piled up a whole bunch of points over 4 years. LeBron would have played like 51. Kareem would have piled up the points. So
tons.
It's pretty amazing what Kareem did. Losing those 4 years. And I mean, he got better, I'm sure, at UCLA, but you're allowed to get better in the NBA too, when all these guys, most of these guys do. So yeah, pretty amazing what he did. But I'm watching LeBron. I watched him last night. He's all he's trying to do now is break the record, in my opinion. He's willing to pass for sure.
Of course, as he always is.
Yeah, he's willing to make some passes anyway. I don't see a defensive fight. I don't see any. I mean, there was a period of the game, I think in the second half, he still hadn't had a rebound yet. Meanwhile, if their centers go to help on a drive, it's a bucket for the Kings because no one else is rebounding but their two centers. LeBron's not doing it. They're just, yeah, he's just trying to get them. And I get it. I would not be surprised. I may have said this Monday. I wouldn't be surprised if LeBron shuts it down after he breaks the record, unless AD is back and rolling. I just wouldn't be surprised because, well, because they're just, it's not going to be worth it.
He's smart enough to know we're not right. This isn't a thing. We are not right. So I'm not going to zap myself of the last like a little bit I have left. Because remember, he wants to play with his son. Right. That is a big thing.
He's
going to
save those minutes. I think. I also don't think Darvin Ham will be back after this year.
Wow, 1 year and out, huh?
I'm just saying he doesn't know what he's doing. And on that front, real quickly, I think we do a terrible job hiring anyone that has never coached before and run a team. The guy at OKC said 4 years at the G League. Mm-hmm. I love taking former players and teaching them how to coach. Bobby Jackson's running the Stockton Kings. Jason Terry's running, I want to say, Utah's team, maybe.
Oh, nice.
Salt Lake City Stars. I love that. It's hard to run a team. There's a lot that goes on. In fact, here's what's really interesting. The G League head coach, Gerard, might have a new player up to 60 minutes before the game, and does. I just got a text while we're on the phone. You saw me looking at my phone. Mm-hmm. A G League player that I talked to is suddenly on a plane now to go to his varsity team.
The big club.
Which means his G League team doesn't have him for their next game. Mm-hmm. And vice versa happens. Mm-hmm. Or you add a player. This happens all the time in the G League. You add a player, unlike the NBA, that you're adding a player that's played in the NBA, at least can get some terminology. You're adding a G League player. You don't know if he knows anything about the G League and your team and certain calls and actions, whatever. That's a great practice for the NBA where guys get hurt all the time too. Mm-hmm. You may have a strategy to play the Sixers with Embiid, and all of a sudden you find out your starting center's out. Now you got to adjust on the fly. Oh, he's going to score 60 on you. It's good practice to have that in the G League. So I hope that more teams do what OKC is doing right now. And then we see some of these other teams hiring coaches. I don't care if you played before. I think there's plenty of guys that didn't play in the NBA. They could coach a team. But hire guys to run your team that have run a team before and not just sit on the side and watch someone else do it all this time. Because that Darvin Ham is up against it and has no idea. In my opinion, he has no idea what he's doing yet in L.A.
Well, the smart teams use their G Leagues as training ground at the top, right? Yep. They run the same offense they run at the big club down below. So there's continuity. I mean, your guy in New Orleans, right? Ryan Pinone was down with their G League team.
Yeah, for
now
three
he's
seasons.
Up with the big club, right? I mean, this is important, guys. Like, just like playing, coaching is development too.
Sure.
And it's not linear.
Right.
You can get better, right? But you got to work at it. All right. You guys know what time it is. Time for top five. And let me tell you, this top five, we got some brand new people in it. First time, at least for me anyway. First time ever. Yeah. All right, Coach. Who is number five for you?
I may have messed up. I've got five oldies but goodies. Number five for me, the last 6-4, the last 10, the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Okay. For the first time almost all season, the Cavaliers are not in my top five.
What the fuck are you doing? I'm telling Donovan.
The 76ers.
Yeah.
I have been poo-pooing on them all. I'm like, I can't look.
All right.
16-4 in the last 20. And as we say, we do this as rolling as what's happening right now. Look, Sixers are very good right now.
I'm sure Joel Embiid's really impressed that you have them at number five. Number four for me, I know they're higher for you. Because of their lack of defense, I still have Denver. I am at four.
Well, I have the Bucks at number four.
Really?
Because while they are still terrible on offense, they're still number three in defense.
Yeah.
They're second in the Eastern Conference, and they're winning games somehow. I'm like, how is this even happening with this team?
Yeah.
Oh, they got Jrue Holiday. They got some guys. They're still pretty good.
They are. They didn't make my top five, though.
That's okay.
I've got Boston at number three.
A three, I got the Denver Nuggets. Look, Jokic is – look, he's probably the MVP again. I know people don't want to hit – really quick on that, David. I'm just – you're curious, and I know why people do it. It's this weird reflexive thing we do with our brains. The only people to ever win three straight are Bird, Russell, and Wilt, right? So people do this thing, well, if I give it to Jokic this year, that means I'm saying he's as good as those people. And I'm like, that's not, like, that's it's not, stupid. It doesn't work that way. It's not, you don't transfer that way. We're saying MVP is in each season thing. In each of the last three seasons, he has been the best player. It doesn't mean now I think he's the best player of all time. It just means this is what's happening.
I agree. And by the way, those guys should be honored that Jokic's name might be next to them because he is one of the best players of all time. He's unbelievable.
He's incredible.
Yeah.
All right. Who's your number two?
I've got the Sixers number two.
Wow. Yeah,
you know I'm high on them. They're rolling.
You're very high on them.
I just think they have everything they need. Maxi is still rounding into form as a young player still. Yeah, I think Philly's really, really built to win.
Number two of the Boston Celtics. Best record in the league. Tatum, Brown, Malcolm Brogdon might be sixth man of the year. I mean, they're just...
They're loaded for sure. So we both have your favorite team.
The Memphis Grizzlies, number one team in the league.
We started doing this, I think, I don't remember if we did it last year. I think we did. But I think all of it was designed so that finally one day you could have Memphis number one.
Was the plan.
They've won 11 straight.
11 straight?
Yeah.
11 straight. Hottest team in the league right now, playing good ball. I'm very curious to see, as we mentioned earlier, if they do anything come the trade deadline. I'm not saying they have to. Yeah. They might just be, look, we go,
development. Be open for business. Be open for business. Yeah. You don't have to do something, but you can do something.
All right, guys, enjoy the weekend. Make sure you check out everything on TrueHoop.com. Also, we had a great conversation yesterday with David Hollander, who wrote the book, How Basketball Can Save the World. I want him and Thomas Belder just talk to each other for 2 hours, and we'll just put microphones out, because basketball is such a spiritual thing for both of them. And they have some really great insight into just why we love this game so much and how it can be used literally to save the world if we were smart enough. But you know, as people, we're probably not. So we'll fuck it up somehow. But check that out. Everybody have a good weekend. Enjoy the games. And we will see you next week. Take care.